Laura Little Wing Moore. I am 54 years old. Today is Tuesday, October 26th, 2021. I am located in King William, Virginia. My recording partner's name is Jim, and he is my one small step conversation partner.
And I am Jim Manhart. My age is 65. Today is October 26, 2021. I'm located in Somersworth, New Hampshire. My recording partner's name is Debbie, and she is my one step conversation partner.
I'd love to pose to you both is just to share with each other what made you interested in doing a one small step conversation with each other today.
Okay. I know we've been trying to do this for a while. I enjoy meeting people, and I'm open to new conversations and learning about people. I've always been a bit philanthropic, and sociable for the most part. So I look forward to having real conversations with my peers.
And mine, I actually had seen some news report on one of the news networks about one story, and I signed up for it because we keep telling us ourselves for the last 20 years we're a divided nation, that we have political polarization. And I liked one story's philosophy of sitting people down with different ideas and just listening to each other, having a conversation, trying to get back to where does America go in the future now that we've come the way we have so far? How do we make a better future for all?
For sharing that. If you are comfortable, the next thing is just if you can read out loud your recording partner's bio. And once you've both done that, feel free to kind of return to those and ask each other any questions you have or things that you were curious to know about each other.
Okay, I'll read Jim's bio. And it says, I am a single man. I lived in the Midwest, Minnesota and Iowa, from birth until age 42, but work brought me to New Hampshire in 1998. I love the NH, life free or die, motto, and hiking in the White Mountains. During my formative years, country and Catholic religion promoted heterosexuality. Thus, my big life event was accepting myself as gay and getting on with my life. Non-political issues that I support include education, medical research, nature, science, historical, and social relief efforts.
And reading Deborah's bio, I am from the Pamunkey Indian tribe here in Virginia and live with my traditional values close to my heart, but not against adaptation. My people were the best at that and evolving. Growing up on the reservation gave me a sense of pride for my culture, but leaving home and living in the urban world was challenging as a young girl. I am now 53, founder of a nonprofit for natives, and in college, traditional master potter and spiritual advisor to many. And Debbie, if I could ask you, I have many questions from your bio, actually. Maybe starting with your first part, where you can you share more about what your traditional values are that you hold close to your heart, and then what you meant by not against adaption, or I think the original one actually said adoption, as to whether there's a difference between those two words. Yeah. So I'll turn it back to you.
Okay. Let's see. I grew up with traditional values. I grew up in my community with my culture. So for me and those around me, when we speak of tradition and traditional values, it's pretty, we all agree on that and feel the same way. It's something you grew up with. So it's interesting that you asked, because I've never really had to answer that question before, which I like, which is great. Traditional values, for me are, I'm not a religious woman, but I am a spiritual woman. And, I played piano in my church. I grew up on my reservation with a Baptist church that was put there. But it was very confusing living and trying to be a Christian and a native. There was a disconnect. Mm-hmm. And my traditional values have to do with my spirituality, and everything I do, I pray on. When I have big decisions, and my prayers are a conversation with my maker like I'm having with you, but there could be an involvement of sage and cedar burning. I believe in that relationship with the higher power. That's where my strength comes from. I've had quite a challenging life, so that is my culture, and those values really kept me lifted through all of it. I'm not against evolution of my people. You know, we're in much of the world, when people learn that you're Native American, you're treated like an artifact or something of the past. So when they see us as we are now, you know, they're expecting something from Hollywood or from an old Western movie that really doesn't exist. So I've had to fight for my Native identity all my life, even from other Indian people, because we are so diverse and so different with each of our tribes. And I am also, my father was Native, but he was also Italian and English. So my mother's a full blood. So I'm pretty much, but I grew up Native. That's how I identify. I grew up on the reservation. My father died when I was a year and a half old. So we left Pennsylvania at that time and came back to the reservation, where I've spent most of my life. But I see a lot of Native people that keep us in the past as well. I dance at the powwows. I do programs at schools and universities. I have two nonprofits that I was the founder of, but I had to put them on the back burner for now with everything that's going on. I just lost my sister.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And it's been a challenging couple of weeks. One of the things that I guess is my life work really was showing how that we are indigenous in the 21st century, and we evolve like other cultures, just like other cultures. And we live like everyone else instead of, you know, it starts when they're young in school. They still show old historical looking ancestors of mine. They don't show us as we are today. So I'm working, my part in all of that is to present myself as I am today and honor my ancestors. Yet here we are in the 21st century, and I'm not extinct. I'm not an artifact. I live in an area where we weren't very accepted. Virginia was tough to grow up in during the civil rights movement. Since the 1600s, Virginia has been a Interesting. And I've been given more opportunity than my mother. So my generation's opening doors for the younger ones, which is good juju. Jim, I want to ask you a question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I see one thing, as I mentioned, with, you know, trying to go to this church I was going to and how difficult it was. And for you, growing up in the Catholic religion or country religion, I can't imagine knowing your true self for all your life and then having to put on this brave face of being something else. Then you finally accepted yourself as you are. Do you want to share anything about that?
Sure. Actually, as you were talking about your experience, I look for similarities when you first meet somebody or something that's a common experience, even though it looks different. You mentioned about your traditional services. I know I forgot what it was besides sage that you burn as you are trying to meditate or talk of a higher power. That's not so different from the Catholic religion that I grew up with that burned incense at different times. It stunk up the church. I'm not certain if it was supposed to make you get to a higher power, but it just struck me that that is some similarities right there. The difference for me would have been you would have known from little on that you were Pamunkey as opposed to white America, possibly. Whereas for me, I can honestly say up through ninth grade, maybe, different gay people have different stories when they come out as to when they knew they were gay. I don't know that I subscribe. I'm a science person, and the jury is still out. Are you gay at birth, or is it an interaction between heredity and environment, which is what I think it is? But I wasn't abused as a child. I was primed to be just like some of the white supremacists, I suppose, or that people are pointing to, the white heterosexual male, except that as I started going through high school, there was a revelation that something isn't quite the same about it. So there's a little bit of difference there. As to my minority status, because I always supposedly had the right or option to hide it, just as looking at you, you would not necessarily probably have to say, well, because of your mixed parents, you wouldn't necessarily have to identify as an Indian, Native American, but that's part of your tradition and part of what you is where you're getting your identity from. For me, I think personally, and I can't speak for other gay people, it doesn't happen to every gay person, but for me, having my society and my religion both have this ideal that what I was supposed to do as a white male in this society was a dissonance. And I think I questioned things more than what I would have had everything gone on, you know, exactly like I had been told to expect and stuff. But I do see some similarities, and I mean, my minority status is being gay, but it's slightly different than other minorities. And I haven't thrown out, you know, what I was taught by my society and by my religion. I had to change some things in order to have a concept of my identity, a good self concept. But the traditional values you talk about were taught to me also by my culture and by my religion, and they serve as guiding principles at 65, even though I might not believe everything that the society and culture told me. And yes, I agree with you. I like your idea of people evolve. If there's a constant in this world, it is that change always happens.
Yes, yes. I find it interesting that, you sure did. Okay. I recently had a conversation with one of my best friends, and we were talking about, you know, with the passing of my sister, people's true colors have really come out when it involves her things, you know, materialistic things, and her beneficiary, who's my oldest brother, who has not, he lives in Louisiana, he's refused to reach out. And we're very estranged. But one of the things that a friend of mine and I, a conversation we had the other day, is I don't have regular TV. I just have internet and Netflix and Prime, Hulu, and I don't get to watch the news. I am not one to discuss politics. That's just me, because everything's such a mess here the last few years. And one of the things that we, as I'm watching, we're watching this, or she's telling me about the news, and I thought, and I verbally said, you know, man has always thought he was at the top of the life chain, above the animals, above the fish, the reptiles, everything. And I don't believe that. I don't believe that we're the smartest of all living things on this earth. I see we make a lot of mistakes and we ruin a lot of things too. How do you feel about that?
Actually, from a scientific standpoint, one of the pillars in my life is my science background. I was trained as a life science person, biology, but I was a high school teacher for 13 years. And in the second year I taught, there was a shortage of physics teachers. So I volunteered because I had only had 1 year of physics in my whole life, and it was a hard course for me. I volunteered to teach this course that I was still teaching 11 years later, and I got to enjoy physics more than my biology. Where that leads me to, my biology background is in sync, whether I'm not certain where you get that man isn't the highest animal, if that's from your traditional Pamunkey value system, but it comes from my science system too. We are an animal like any other animal, that we do have a brain that allows us to wonder, what the heck are we here for? But we... And that has given us an advantage to think we're the smartest creature on the earth, which we may be on the earth, but I don't know if in the whole universe. The physics has got me pushed into unifying principles, where the physicists today are trying to, in an inch equation, explain everything in the universe and their grand unifying theories. And that appeals to me too. I don't know that I'll ever understand the mathematics of what they do, but there is all this question, why were we made? Why are we here? And even if there was no God, does that mean we can just be selfish and not get along with the other people in our world? Right. And I say, no, it doesn't. Another pillar of my life, religion, when I knew I didn't believe every kind of thing that the Catholic Church might have taught me in terms of sacraments and stuff, it just wasn't doing it for me to go to a church service where the priest is talking about Adam and Eve and not getting to maybe something more meaty than what I was told as a first grader in Catholic school and understood then as a first grader, mm-hmm. but as an adult want to understand with some better, you know, how do I change as an adult to take something I was told as a little kid and make it practical to how I live as an adult.
Yeah, I wanted to pick your brain on that because I noticed the nature science historical part of your bio there. And I am quite the nature and science and historical nerd. I don't have the degrees. My degree is in psychology, cultural psychology. But I love science.
And that's my minor, by the way.
Okay.
That was my minor. Science includes the social sciences also, mainly because I had, as a senior in high school, I had sociology and psychology from a teacher mm-hmm. who hands down was my mentor in a time when I felt very alone. I knew by high school, if I had had good role models, that I was gay, but couldn't tell anyone or didn't tell anyone.
Yeah. So psychologically having to harbor that secret, like myself, I consider myself non-binary. I don't like putting titles on people. I don't like putting, am I bisexual? Am I straight? I do not like it. I never was one to put a title on what my sexuality is. I'm open and I free flow. I don't see people. I see the spirits of people. They're inside what they bring from their heart and spirit compared to their exterior. Now the exterior does help, but I'm not straight. I'm not bi. I'm not gay. I just can't put a label. I'd rather not label myself because society mm-hmm. has labeled us. And being a Native American, it's also hard at my age now. I still can't talk about it openly because in my communities, it wasn't very accepted. And my family wouldn't accept that. So I still can't talk about it. I don't want to talk about it with them because of the negative that I will hear, and I don't want to hear it. So I have this secret. Many of my friends and all I can talk to, but as far as blood family, no.
Yeah. Can I follow up on that just and not trying to convince you of anything, but the part of why I did this one story conversation that I said, you know, bringing people together. One thing, as much as in my lifetime, my opinion is Donald Trump was the worst president of my whole lifetime, which goes all the way back to Eisenhower. And I voted Republican. I voted for Gerald Ford, was my first vote for American president. So although I lean left, I'm more, can we get the middle of the people that can listen and have conversations and are not pulling the moral card, that this is a moral card or something, that I have to believe this, and can bring people more together, is a piece. It really was the election where I realized I have two sisters that I have. I come from a family of, I have six siblings besides myself. So I came from a, what in those days was a medium-sized Catholic family. We weren't on the farm where they had 13 kids or whatever, but we were townies in a rural town. Mm-hmm. And I've lost my train of thought here. I've gone on a tangent. I have two sisters that identify as evangelical, and I realized I have been listening to the news, unlike you, and I'm being told by my news media what evangelicals think. And here I have two family members that are evangelical, and I've never asked them what that meant. And over the Christmas holidays last year, when we couldn't get together, for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and we're in our other places, I decided I'm going to finally ask my sisters, what does being evangelical mean to them? And I got two different answers from them. Yeah. And yes, part of it was evangelical meant that you take the Bible as a starting place. But I also found, just comparing my two sisters, because they differ a bit in educational amount of formal education they've gone through. One sister was more fundamentalist about what the Bible says, and another one was not. And even for myself, for me as a gay man to come to terms with the religious background, because I went through to a Catholic school from grades 1 through 8. Six of those grades were pre-Vatican II stuff, although the changes in the church that occurred when I was in sixth grade. So I had some pre-Vatican II Catholic teaching and some post-Vatican II teaching and things. So I've learned to embrace at least my Catholicism allows me not to choose a choice between Republican and Democrat, because I have some relatives that vote Republican solely on the abortion issue, the right to life issue for them. And that's a moral issue for them. You're not going to convince them any differently. And yet I have Catholics in the family that embraced more so the social justice of the post-Vatican II changes that came out of the church, and they voted Democrat. So I actually come from a background, when I talk of my family, we're split. We're split like the country is. But I was wondering, that was a hard conversation I had to start with my siblings. But I thought, if I couldn't start it with my own family, is there any hope that I could help America come together? And so can you share more, if you wish, about, you said you're kind of estranged from, I think you mentioned a brother, as to what causes that friction in your family, or why you don't think it's maybe possible to have a difficult conversation with your own family, or what would be some of the with it.
I have two brothers that really don't communicate with their family. And I don't try to make excuses for them. They are who they are. One of them went through a lot of trauma, and he's just kind of likes to keep to himself, and that's okay. I wish him all the best, but he really hurt my mother and I with his actions and some of the things he did in life. We forgave him, but he just would rather not communicate, and that's fine. My oldest brother, we just well, I've met him twice that I remember. He's 71. My mother was 15 when she was raped on near the reservation. And he, my oldest brother, is my half-brother, which I didn't know until 2 years ago. And he just hasn't made too many attempts to communicate with me or my mother. With my sister recently passing, he was her beneficiary. He didn't come to the services. He told me he wasn't going to help. And my mother was excited about her oldest, her firstborn, coming. She was 16 when she had him. But he hasn't called her since. And him and my sister spoke often. I don't know what they spoke about. My sister had a thing where our relationship was off and on, but that was by her choice. I always approached her with love as a sister, but she had a hard time with that, and that could be from her own trauma. You know, historical trauma runs deep in our family, and it's passed on to generation until somebody finally says it stops here, and that's what I've chosen to do. I've reached out enough. You know that story about, you know, the dog bites, but you keep trying to pet it and it keeps biting you, but you keep trying, you keep getting bit. Yeah. And that's how it feels with them. So I'm not going to get bit anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to. I've done everything with love, with patience. I've done my part, but I don't believe my maker, my creator. It caused such depression in my life. It caused so much depression and hurt that I wasn't able to focus on the things in life I need to focus on. And I have done diligent work within the last few years to let them go. I don't believe we're meant to be here depressed and not functioning. And I was not functioning to my best abilities, and which is I've always...
Right.
Strive to do my best in everything I do. And family or not, if they're toxic, they're toxic. So yeah. I'm just trying to hold my mother together right now through all of this, because I'm pretty much all she has. There are three other children of hers that are living, but they're all boy. The boys just, you know, they're just not capable of thinking about anything but themselves. So not to rip them apart or anything, but I'm very different than the rest of my family. And right now my priority is to help my 87-year-old mother get through this transition and bring her some joy in her older days, because her trauma in life has been so obvious and so overwhelming that we're doing work on that too. Help her heal through that. The boys, they're on their own. And it doesn't hurt anymore. I think I hurt long enough over it. That's about all I can say about that.
Well, I think I see similarities again there in terms of it's the humanness. When I lived in the Midwest, I was living in the gay closet, and the biggest leap of faith I took, so to speak, was moving here to New Hampshire, where my job took me in 98. I mean, I was looking for a job. I had to leave the Midwest to move to New Hampshire, and part of my healing, part of how did I get to the point where I could openly be recorded and say I'm gay. You know, if you had asked me 40 years ago, was that ever possible? I would have said no way. And I look at three things in my life. I'm kind of, even though my background is in science, the first subject that I ever did well at in school was actually, well, geography, because I wanted to know where the heck I was on the face of the planet. But then history. I always thought history was boring. I think of my father, who was a veteran in World War II. I used to think when I was a little kid, World War II was ancient history. It was only 11 years before I was born. And right. It was my parents' generation. But you needed, one of the teachers I taught with one time said to me, I think you have to live long enough to have a sense of your own personal history in order to appreciate, you know, thousands of years of human history and what's going on.
Agreed.
And things. But that piece, and then being in a supportive group, one of the first things, luckily, when I moved out here in 98, the internet was just coming into being. In terms of email and things like that. And I was able to find that, you know, if I moved out to New Hampshire, there was a gay and lesbian hiking club out of Boston that existed. And I, for a whole year, got their newsletters, but it was kind of cultural shock coming out here to live in New Hampshire, because it was like, what happened to the familiar coordinate grid of streets and avenues? These streets out here, they use every number from 100 to 200 rather than for houses or places of business, rather than it's between First Avenue and Second Avenue, or between First Street and Second Street. So it's cultural shock moving out here to some extent. And the Northern Yankee milieu of this. So it took me a year, but then after a year, I started hiking with this gay and lesbian club, found that these people were just like me, had some of the same issues. Whereas the only thing I saw in the Midwest in the time I grew up was the news would cover some gay pride parade where some gay male was dressed up in drag. And I don't have a gender identity problem. I've always identified as male. You know, so I've not had any issues of wanting to dress up in women's clothing. Although I'm surprised that I've had a heterosexual brother and heterosexual cousins that always got a kick out of when we were kids dressing up in the dresses that my sisters and cousin, young female cousins were dressing up as. But it was like I had no role model then. It was like, well, I'm not exactly like what I see on the media, and there's no one in all of the Midwest that's like me, so maybe if I just go to the coast, because the news did tell you there were gay people in New York, Miami, and San Francisco.
Right.
And it's beyond my wildest dreams that even I could get married nowadays at this
rate. Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's fabulous.
But there's been equality. There's two
working towards equality. Incidents.
Yeah, two other incidences from childhood that I list also. Gay marriage is one of them. Mothers Against Drunk Driving also did a big impact. When I grew up, I remember my dad and my uncles drinking, you know, at family get-togethers, and would have one for the road as they had load up their family to the car and go off, drive home while having been drinking all afternoon. And that has changed. And the other one is the fall of the Berlin Wall. Did we ever think the Soviet Union was going to fall apart in our lifetime?
So right.
There's
right.
always hope. There's always hope, I think. But yes, I think I agree with you if I felt that my family, that I couldn't, I've never really had a conversation about the about being gay or them asking me anything like, do you have a boyfriend or anything? So I've never really talked to them about it. But that was the input for me to contact and just ask my, I asked both of my evangelical sisters in a paragraph or two to write down, what does being an evangelical mean to you?
Okay.
What have you done in your nonprofits? I know they're kind of on hold.
Well, in 2003, I started the Intertribal Women's Circle. Actually, in 1998, I started meeting with the women from my own tribe. And we had formed the Pamunkey Women's Council. And over the years, as other Indian women, you know, there were only listed like 13,000 natives in Virginia at the time when we had so many, like 80,000. We had so many more, but they weren't from a Virginia tribe. They were away from home, away from their people. So there came a time when I opened a meeting to all the Indian women I knew that I had met through my networking, and for them to bring their families. And our first big meeting, there was over 100 women from far as Florida to Maine that came. Many Native women in Virginia that were away from their tribes and felt alone here. And I videotaped it, I taped it, and everyone was in tears to be able to meet and have women of like mind come together. So we ended up changing the name to the Intertribal Women's Circle because they weren't all Pamunkey. And unfortunately, my own tribal members, the majority of the women down there just kind of turned on me. They didn't want that, but they also wanted, you know, you have people that, you know, have their own selfish reasons for things. And I wasn't about that. I was about unifying our women, because our women didn't have a voice at the time. We didn't have a vote in our tribe. We didn't have the right to speak. I mean, anything. And we come from matrilineal societies. So a lot of matrilineal societies have gotten together. And over the years, there's about 200 members. We received numerous community service awards from the House, from the governors. I received two community service awards myself for the work that I do in the arts, and teaching traditional art forms to tribal people. Native Journey Woman, I was the East Coast executive director. One of my mentors died from cancer a few years ago, and she asked that I continue on the East Coast. And it was more about Native women's wellness and conversations that we didn't have. I mean, there's a lot of conversations that women in general don't have, because it was taboo or whatever to talk about. So we opened those doors. One of those doors was historical trauma. It was not something ever talked about. Nobody knew what it was. Nobody understood, why am I so sad? I have a great life. What's going on? What's this word? And, you know, when you have a 98-year-old elder that comes to you and says, thank you, because now I have a word for what I feel and I never knew it. These are the, those are the bonuses of doing the work we did. So.
What do you mean by historical trauma? I'm not certain I have maybe the same concept behind when I hear those words.
Well, the easiest way I can tell you is, consider my ancestors. They're living in a land, on a land that they don't claim. It's a gift. They're surviving. They have agriculture. They have technology. And another group of people comes along and says, oh, I'm going to take this from you because you don't deserve it. So we're going to keep pushing you out of the way. And through all of that, through the losses, through the deaths, my people never got to sit still and mourn. They had to keep going, keep fighting. So there was no mourning time. Through that, and it's proven, I believe, scientifically, I don't remember the group that did it, that in our DNA is this trauma. It's still in our bodies. It's from our mothers and our grandmothers. There was no time to mourn. And if you've been through a traumatic experience, like I have, and I was diagnosed with PTSD several years ago, but I've done a lot of work to get through that. The trauma of my mother and her mother is in me. And that trauma, when it connects to your own personal trauma, there's this deep hurt, this empty void that has never been addressed in my people until more recently when we started having meetings about it. And it's still a work in progress, but there's plenty of cultures where their ancestors didn't get to mourn. They had to keep fighting. They had to keep going. They had to keep moving. They had to keep getting kicked in the teeth, and there was no time to mourn. And those are energies and emotions that you have to get out of the body. It's poison. And many of my ancestors didn't get the opportunity to do that. And it's not just our culture. It's many cultures.
Right.
Did that answer your question?
It gives me food for thought in terms of I've heard even in scientific circles what you just said. I haven't read a lot on it. But being passed through the DNA, that there might be something to that. Now, as a science person, I don't know. Well, you can never prove anything 100% sure. Science is always tentative. We forget that.
Yeah.
But it's the same as for the longest time, I wasted a lot of my life, early life, wondering whether gayness is caused by heredity or environment. Well, it's probably both. You know, they interacted. Mm-hmm. I'm a gay person. If you asked me what turned me gay, I wouldn't know. It's the same question most gay people say to heterosexuals. How did you know, at what point did you know you were heterosexual? You know? Yeah. It's like, when did the light bulb come on? Well, when the hormones came on, about the same time. And then weren't you somewhat insecure on what it meant to be female or male? And all of those pieces. In our short time, though, one of the things I've been fascinated with Native American culture is realizing, I believe all Native Americans have been American citizens for, they're coming up on the 100th birthday come 2024. And I always wonder, when you talk about your culture, when you refer to my culture, is that in juxtaposition to American culture, or do you see, is there a way that you also see you're part of the great United States?
Well, my culture predates America. So when I say my culture, it's my indigenous culture. That's how I relate. That's how I identify. That's how I grew up with a traditional family on a reservation. When I left home, I still kept my traditions in my home, but I was living in an urban, in cities. I lived in Florida and New York, Alaska. Alaska was different because I learned to survive there, but living elsewhere, a lot of people thought I was Puerto Rican because, you know, I don't look like the Hollywood Indian, and I had to fight for my indigenousness. So when I say my identity is 100% Native, and I know my rich culture comes from Powhatan, the Opecancano, Kwakoeski, the Queen of the Pamunkey was my grandmother. So I have a rich history here that predates America. So I don't consider myself an American citizen. I do consider myself in union with the earth here, and this is my homeland. And the thing with indigenous people, it's it's not so much about, it's also about our identity, but it's also our connection to the land. That's the most important to us, is the land that we have been able to keep. My tribe has been able to preserve some of our land. A lot of it was taken, but we have fought for this land and we are connected to that.
Right.
So I think that indigenous, the majority of indigenous people, especially my generation, will say it's that connection to land. Like even when I left home, I wasn't ever home. I sang in blues bands. I did great things, but I wasn't home till I came back home.
I see.
That you want to share with each other, or just close out. I'll turn the recording off when you're ready.
Well, I enjoyed this conversation and listening to you.
I did too. I mean, it actually, I see more similarities granted the surface features of our experience are vastly different, but I try to see ways for unification. The final note, my last question to you was really trying to figure out, for me, accepting myself as a gay American, one of the ways I was able to do that was realizing a white heterosexual male living in this society today is no life of cherries either. Yes, there may be privileges, but you're blamed for every evil on the face of the planet. And so it's kind of like I'm trying to figure out when indigenous people are seen as different, or any group, Hispanic, African Americans, cling to their own identity, how is that perceived by the white people? And it's more, are you rejecting the white culture? Now, you have a good reason to do so in your "you were here first" piece. This tradition has been ongoing more than 1776, when America was made.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't reject any of my culture. I'm actually, since my father died, I wasn't 2 years old yet. And his mother had told my mother, his mother didn't approve of the marriage because my mother was Native. And they did not know that he also had Native blood on his father's side. And I remember Mom telling me that she had said to Mom, "Well, Bill always did like to bring stray dogs home." So that's how my mother was accepted into his family. So we didn't, I didn't get to learn much about his family until the last few years, where I found Shawnee and the Italian. I've lived in so many diverse communities that I never really felt, I didn't feel like an outsider because I'm open to culture. I love culture and history. But I wasn't with my indigenous people always. And that made me feel very different than other people around me until I got older. And those were just my own demons I had to work on. I'm very open and I can speak to anyone. But I am quite the homebody because of everything that's going on now. I feel like Trump set us back hundreds of years. And the prejudice in my area where I live is pretty rampant. So I choose to stay in my safe place, which is here. And I think that has to do with my PTSD too. Did that answer? I don't think I answered your question, but
giving me further fodder to think about, which is why
I honor all my blood. I call them blood tones. I just honor living, and I choose to be a more traditional indigenous woman. From birth, I believe that's where I am. That's my life. That's the choice I made, to honor that above all else. And it hasn't been easy, but I am a teacher in it. So I've been given amazing opportunities and have enlightened a lot around me, a lot of those around me that, you know, we're more accepted now than we were when I was growing up. We were still artifacts, right, or people made fun, or, you know, there were always jokes. And then, you know, as you get older, you grow a thicker skin. So those things really don't bother me so much. I just see ignorance at that point. But I would fight. I wanted to fight everybody. And, you know, I think we do that when we're young and full of hormones. You want to protect your family. And I was fearless. I would fight anybody. Things have changed. And it's just up to us as Indigenous people to educate. And so I want to be part of that solution, not the problem, you know.
It's part of the tribal, if you excuse the pun, the tribal instinct, and it's true of any group, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
It's part of our human evolution, I think.
I think so, too. I mean, we were taken, some of us are still hunter-gatherers. I'm still a hunter-gatherer, but I live in 2021, and I want the best for my life and my family, just as everybody else does, you know. But I've really enjoyed our conversation, Jim. Thank you.
I have too. There's much more I could ask you about. We could go on for a couple of hours.
We need to get together again.
Because you've actually added to my understanding of Native Americans. I didn't get a chance to say I actually had, when you talk about being in the minority, visibly in the minority, my first experience was when I'm an early retiree and I volunteered at the National Park Service out at El Morro National Monument.
Oh, wow.
And I had the Hispanics, the Zuni Indians, and the white people like myself, all in that area of New Mexico. And I was out there for 11 weeks, and that's the longest experience I've ever had where I'm not in the majority. And that changes your opinion. It's more fear of the unknown of the other is out to harm you or do you ill or whatever.
I understand. Yeah. I understand.
And one of the most moving things was one of the Zuni Indians one time, he was just getting a drink of water and on his way back, he stopped to talk to me and one of the park rangers. And in like a 3-minute monologue, he talked about his religious beliefs. And I really wish I had that on tape because it was wow.
Yeah.
And then even some guilt, although obviously I wasn't part of it. I'm well aware of in my native state of Minnesota, the Lakota people were driven out. 38 Lakotas were hung for the so-called Sioux uprising of 1862.
Yeah.
I know it's called something else by the
Native Americans. It wasn't very long ago.
No. And things. So I've evolved in my own lifetime.
Well, I hope we get to talk again.
We're over time, so I'm going to turn the recording off if that's all right.
Okay.
Sure. Okay.